Welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming, episode 21. Here are your hosts, Alex and John, Garrett, Matthew, Jeremy. They're all out tonight. So it's just John and I today. John, what's on your workbench?
Hey, how the hell are you, Alex? Not too much happening on my workbench this week. Actually, to be honest with you, after the BAO last weekend, I literally came home for half a day and then hopped on an airplane off to Detroit, spent the week out there in classes, and just got back on Friday. Really have not been doing much. And I tell you what, I was looking forward to recording tonight, catching up with my buddy Garrett, who I haven't spoken to in a while, hear what my friend Matthew is up to, both of those cheese balls had some kind of bullshit excuse why they couldn't be here. Now, with Garrett, I guess something about a sick puppy. So being a dog lover, I guess that's a valid excuse. And, Matthew, who knows, maybe he stubbed his toe or something like that. Anyways, in honor of them not being here, I have a little bowl of cherries for Matthew. And a little bit of the Izzy sparkling Clementine soda in honor of Garrett. So a little bit of deliciousness on my bench. And that is all the hell I am up to this week, Alex.
Okay. Right on. I got to tell you, Matthew actually is nursing a baby squirrel back to health. So despite the fact that he's not a Sylvaneth player, he's got those Sylvaneth tendencies. So, who knows? There might be
Not going to out him on the squirrel. You heard me catch myself. I was about to say something about it, but I wanted him to, he has kind of an image, respectable image there. And so I didn't want anyone, getting the wrong idea about him and his little pet rodent.
Ooh, he's definitely not a Skaven player, but
I may be rubbing off on him, but
who knows.
I keep my rats plastic, that's for sure.
I actually do have things on my workbench, which is weird to say.
Yeah, what are you doing?
So first of all I haven't really been drinking during these episodes anything, but I do have a nice glass of ice water, and I'm drinking a White Claw hard seltzer because who knows, it's in my refrigerator, so that's what we're doing tonight. And then I am actually working on repairing a few 10 Dreadblade Herodons that I picked up in the used pile for Frontline Gaming's used section at Bay Area Open at KublaCon a couple of weekends ago. And then
They had some tasty stuff over there, man. I made the mistake of starting to look in the Skaven bin, and pretty soon I had like four bags in my hand. I was like, I just put them back. I'm like, I'm just gonna walk away right now.
That's how they do it. That's how they get you. I'm trying to fix up those because a few of them were damaged, and of course they're gonna have to be repainted. And then in the meantime, I had a while ago bought more Bladegeist Revenants, and they are. More Revenants are going to be vital in my new version of the Nighthaunt army that I had in the 2018 season. I'm pretty much going to be leaning a little bit closer towards Nighthaunt as we get closer and closer to the General's Handbook. General's Handbook does come out sometime this month. I'm going to guess, maybe the last weekend of June. But with that,
That would line it pretty much with how they dropped version 2.0 last year too. So right at the end of June. So makes sense.
Exactly. And though I don't think all my predictions that I initially have alluded to are going to be correct, I don't think they're going to get rid of Legion recycling or anything like that. The recycling of units. Certain units are probably going to go up. Units like Reapers, at least a little bit. Maybe some Nighthaunt units will come down, which is great because I have a lot of them. And then the other big one that I was not expecting, but I guess is likely, there is a big chance, I assume, that Nighthaunt will be removed from the other great legions of the Legion of Nagash, the other four, and may only be playable in a Legion of Grief. So again, I
don't. Oh, wow. Really? How reliable is that rumor?
I think it's deductive reasoning more, you know, on my part, just because the Legion of Grief gives very explicit keywords that you are allowed to have in the army. You know, you're not allowed to have any soul blight keyword. You're not allowed to have, you know, other keywords that aren't just death mages. I believe it's death mages, night haunt, death rattle, dead walker. What's the word I'm looking for? Death lords, which would include all the Mortarks and Nagash. And I think that that's it. So, you know, they don't have all access to all death characters or keywords, or units just because of that. So, that's my assumption, is that they might say, you know, Legion of Sacrament is only allowed to have these keywords, you know, this Legion is only allowed to have these keywords, et cetera. Or at least have a unit that shares at least one of these keywords, which would remove essentially Grimghast Reapers from all Legion lists that aren't a Legion of Grief. Now, again, I'm not certain that that's going to happen, but after reading the rules for Legion of Grief, I think it's safe to assume that.
I tell you, if anyone's going to pay attention to that and know that, it's you. So we'll see. We'll see if that pans through. I would not bet against you on that.
Yeah, I mean, really what I'm mainly worried about is the removal of the Nighthaunt Battle Tome with the Legion of Grief. However, I think that that's unlikely, because that book is only about a year old. And it's a very solid book with very solid allegiance traits. So I don't think they're going to remove a battle tome. I think that it just might not come up to the fore as much and be as frequently used. But I'm certainly going to go just head back straight into pure Night Haunt if there are changes like that involved, because I honestly really like Wave of Terror and other rules that are available for Night Haunt itself. A lot of teleportation, a lot of mobility. You won't need the boat to be mobile. Yes. But that's also something I got planned out. I got the boat. I'm trying to make a little conversion for that. You know, that is actually something we can start to lean into, though. You know, with Forbidden Power, you know, there's going to be the terrain piece that everyone can buy for 100 points. But then there's also those endless spells, you know, the bridge, the boatman.
The boatman, and of course the template that you now have to buy to place your models carefully around him.
Yes, from Tectonic Studios, I believe. You know, it's our good friend Joe knows a lot about that organization's inner workings. I think, you know, I don't think that the boat's going to be all that great for a Night Haunt army, given how mobile they are. But for a Skaven army especially, I think that it's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be able to launch a unit of Plague Monks that much further across the board. I mean, Skaven's pretty fast as it is. But again, something like that to just launch yourself places, why not? The only problem is that Skaven does rely pretty heavily on bubbles and auras and effects of their characters. So sometimes launching a unit out on its own leaves it kind of just hanging out to die as well. So that's almost a suicide move. So, again, maybe we'll see if I end up using it. I mean, I will try it, of course, because you got to experiment with everything and see how it works. But how much I really will invest in that has yet to be seen, as a matter of fact. In fact, I myself, as far as Skaven goes, I've been playing Pestilence heavy lists lately. You know, just because I have all my monks painted up and everything, it's nice to be able to drop them on the table. But right now I kind of have my eye on some more magic heavy lists, as specifically focusing on more of the endless spells. So incorporating like the boatman and really all these new spells, old spells, I think is what I'm looking for list wise. Now, as far as the General's Handbook coming out, you know, what I'm looking at is that most of the battle tomes that I play are newer, have newer codexes. You know, so my wife has Blades of Khorne, which has a battle tome that just came out. I'm playing Skaven for the most part right now. It has a battle tome that just came out. But I'm also playing two older armies. One is Idunnuth Deepkin, and the other is Maggotkin of Nurgle. And I think both of those armies are old enough that we're going to see a little bit of a points adjustment or a little bit of a love inside of the general's handbook. The last two, we've seen points adjustments for both of those armies. So I'm looking for a little more of that same action. So the other ones, like I said, Skaven and Newer, Flesh Eater Courts, all of those are too new to be in the general's handbook. You know, we know anything that's been released in the last 6 months, maybe longer. Those points were in the bag, and kind of the general's handbook itself was already in the can too. So, you know, it's fair to say that the general's handbook 2019 was probably just about complete or heading off to the printers right at the beginning of 2019. So anyways, that's what I've been looking at, Alex, is just some points adjustments for some of my older armies. Maybe give them a little bit more spice, a few more units on the table. Other than that, I don't know. I think we're going to see, obviously, a lot of the things that had their own mini battle tome. Obviously, Pestilence, Scryer, Hedonist, Slaanesh all have battle tomes now. So those are going to be gone from the General's Handbook 2019. So it might be a little bit of a thinner book. On the other hand, we might see a revamp of some of the Mortal Realms. We might see a revamp of the realm abilities or realm spells, realmscape features, realm command abilities, as it were. I think all of those need to be revisited. Some of them are a little dangerous. And when we do have tournaments out there that will roll randomly to combine those, you just kind of never know what you'll get. So I think those could definitely see some review. And every year, what do we see? We see a bunch of new missions. I mean, that's like the most consistent thing is we're going to see six new missions or six refinements of existing missions, right?
Remember, we talked about this in one of our previous episodes, I think about two episodes ago. You know, it's funny. We don't actually know. And unfortunately, we don't have enough solid information from Games Workshop because it's actually in the initial information or announcement of General's Handbook coming out in June. They actually say one thing and say a completely different thing just a moment later.
Oh, what's that?
Well, at first they say, you know, there are no new battle tomes in General's Handbook 2019, and then new battle plans. And then underneath that, it says like what you'll expect out of General's Handbook 2019. And they have like four little circles or three little circles. And one of them says new battle plans. So in the paragraph above, it says there will not be new battle plans for match play. And then below that, it says new battle plans. So that could very well be that there's no match play battle plans that are added, but maybe there's a few, you know, like ones based around the stories for, you know, Soul Wars or Forbidden Power or something
okay.
like that.
Okay. Some more narrative stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or they could very well just, who knows, just add more match play anyways and just have been like, well, someone wrote that wrong, you know?
Or we could be looking at a matrix too. That would be kind of interesting, sort of 40K style, where you say, you know, here's your possible map setups and here's your possible objective layouts. Go for it.
Maybe. I mean, I think that would really depend on a lot of different factors, and that is also something that leads us to take a keener look at the tournament that's going to be run a little later in the summer by Games Workshop in the United States. You know, they haven't always had the best track record of hosting their own events, at least in terms of rules, style, etc.
Is that so? I'm super not familiar with GW events.
It's because they haven't really happened in the United States since I don't know, 2008, 2009.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I was definitely not in the hobby way back then.
Yeah. So who knows what the cycle is going to be? I mean, as it stands, you know, we all play, you know, straight out of the book, but you know, maybe they do take a look at things like 40K AO or 40K ITC or something like that. I know that overall, that may not get a lot of positive reception, but it's possible that they might have a streamlined system like that. That's certainly possible.
I mean, there's no reason that they wouldn't use something like BCP just for the pairings aspect. You know, obviously the ability to use BCP has nothing to do with sort of how you run your event or the rules you would choose. So, I mean,
of course.
And what we do know is that GW is certainly, quote, aware of BCP and the ITC and all of that good stuff. So
of course,
you know, I can only, and they've only, as far as I know, they've only been supportive of everything there too. Right. It's like, yeah, it sounds great. You know, yeah, that's something that a way you Yanks like to play, go for it. You know, though I would say ITC and the 40K side is certainly very worldwide nowadays. And on the AOS side, it's still, as we well know, it's strongest out here in the West Coast and is growing in strength across the U.S. But that's not to say that there's not, you know, AOS ITC events worldwide, but predominantly is still North America.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So who knows? And even then, you know, ITC AOS is just rulebook Age of Sigmar. Has nothing to do with that. You know, we've already had that conversation with, you know, the individuals from the Texas Masters League, which it was great to inform John about, you know, the fact that, you know, ITC, again, is very much Alexandrian in its policies, at least for Age of Sigmar, but really for any system that they have. You know, it's not about a structured, specifically regimented set of rules. It's, in fact, quite the opposite. It's literally a checked box and whatever the TO wants. So, however, you did bring up BCP, and you're right, Games Workshop is well aware of Best Coast pairings. You know, with that, we did have a slightly eventful week, weekend just last week for events in the United States for AOS. Unfortunately, some of them were a little harder to track down. You know, for Texas Masters League, I know that there was a Gerald's 2K event. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like there was a full roster put together there, so I hope everyone had fun. There was also a Bug Eater GT that was specifically in Omaha, Nebraska. I know our good friend Joe Cryer did go to it, however, and did pretty well. I'm pretty sure he got best chaos there. Unfortunately, BCP is more of a formality, I guess. They're in the system, but nothing's there. So the individuals, the TOs.
Yeah, they had some internet connectivity issues as far as that goes, which is unfortunate. I myself was looking forward to seeing what was happening at that event.
Yeah, me too. Hey, next time, guys in Bug Eater, someone's got to have a hotspot, right? So
Yeah, whatever. Stuff happens. There were some other events, though. As I'm looking around, it's funny. I myself last week was out in Detroit, and it's funny, you know, Michigan is it's a beautiful state this time of year. I don't know if you've ever been to Michigan in the springtime, but it is absolutely beautiful. Everything is green, trees, you know, there are lots of lakes everywhere. It's an amazing place this time of year. And I see that out at the Acropolis, they had a little Age of Sigmar tournament. Looks like, you know, just eight guys, but hey, that's just enough for a 3-round tournament to determine a true winner, right? And lo and behold, I look at the people who placed there, and wouldn't you know, and I'm not surprised, you know, I would say, you know, Michigan is known for, shall we say, a little bit more, shall we say, gun-loving militia types out there. And, you know who won this tournament out there at the Acropolis was the God King Nagash playing the Flesh Eater Quartz.
You know, it's now, weird. Caleb,
yeah, he didn't load his list, but, you know, being the God King, I don't know if we should really expect him to upload lists and everything. But we can say, imagine that he brought the heat to win that particular event.
Well, you know, Nagash isn't a huge fan of Flesh Eater Quartz. He kind of uses them as a tool. So who knows? Maybe he was embarrassed by them.
Yeah, maybe. And then it looks like Caleb took second with the Beastclaw Raiders, and Evan with Eidnith Deepkin in third. So a nice little breakdown. I see Matt in fourth with Skaven. So it looks like a pretty fun event over there at the Acropolis. What about you, Alex? Any of these other ones that happened this weekend catch your eye?
Well, I mean, that event stands out to me because we got a few unique names. There's also a Ted Bender. Who knows what that is? However, there was another event in my backyard, essentially. There was the Conflicts of Light event in Bellingham, Washington, and that's not necessarily in my backyard. It is about 3.5 hours north of me. However, a few familiar names did pop up here. Looks like this is one where a lot of Victoria's Secret individuals did go to. You know, though it is in Best Ghost Pairings for our listeners, unfortunately, not everyone uploaded their list. So for all you TOs listening, make sure that that's a requirement, because your list might be talked about. However, you know, it does look like it was a decent sized event. You know, about 15 people showed up. There were a lot of teams, Victoria's Secret, Dimensional Cascade, Dark Tower Games crew. I see a few familiar faces here. I know that it was won by Disciples of Tzeentch player Matt Beasley. But then also, you know, there's quite a bit here. Matthew Kangster got second place with a Sylvaneth army. I've played him before. You know, it's a good list. It's a, you know, got a lot of you know, the Spirit Revenants, Ariel, Branch Wraith, Branch Witch. But, you know, coming down a little further down the line here, I do see, I don't want to quite call him my nemesis, but he did beat me round one of Riptide. We got our good friend Chris Michelson with his Disciples of Tzeentch as well. You know, that good old friendly Zangor coven, which is always a... it's a bit of a dick punch. At least
is it really?
Well, yeah. You know, when we played, he rolled a lot of sixes, which became casting an unbinds of 13. So
yeah, you can't do much about that. If they're going to roll sixes, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, he did pretty well for himself. He got fifth place at the event. So, you know, 2-1. That's good. That's good.
That's not bad. And I see right behind him is our good friend Jack Ballard. Who seems to be rolling the old hosts of Slaanesh nowadays. So I imagine he is bringing the heat. There's another army that likes it when you roll lots of sixes.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. The last few events, like Rose City Wrath and Riptide GT, he was primarily playing Stormcast, specifically very shooty Stormcast with not quite a Vanguard wing, I believe, but definitely two ballistas, a lot of bows, you know, the long bows specifically. And it's a few times that I've seen him, he's worn like a big pink hat with a Slaanesh logo on it. And I think I told him a couple of times, I'm like, hey man, you just gotta start playing Slaanesh. Who knows? Who knew he had it in the hangar. So
interesting. So he had a little bit of foreshadowing going on there. Here's your warning. You better be ready. This is coming, huh?
Yep. So he had some foreshadowing there in his attire. So
that is great.
Yeah. So it's great to see him doing good with another army, especially if it's he's a switch hitter now, which I guess might even be just Slaanesh's thing, right?
Yeah. So, going between order and chaos. The most order of order and the most chaos of chaos, I would say.
Yep. I agree. That fits in line with them. Yeah. However, you know, outside of that, looks like there might have been a test event. Not a lot of other things that might have been that big or significant here. Again, would have been great to review Bug Eater. However, you know, that puts us right in line to talk about the typical list reviews that we have. Now, you know, we've kind of had in the last few episodes a variety of different lists we've talked about and armies. But I wanted to talk about one of my favorite models I've seen in your collection specifically.
Oh.
You know, for our listeners out there, if you ever see any of John's armies, before I ever met John personally, I saw his army for 40K and thought, well, you know, I really don't want to play him because it was an entire army of Space Marine bikes and they all had LEDs. And whether it was maybe on purpose or by accident, they all happened to hit at the certain angles where, you know, if you were of certain heights, you might get blinded. So, you know,
I've been accused of that. I assure you that was all accidental.
Yeah. So, you know, he's does really well with, you know, LEDs and lights in his models. And one of my favorite models that John has is his Thankwell and Bone Ripper. It's a great looking model. He's got lights all over it. And it's well painted, which makes it even better. And I think that might be a great place to look at today for a unit review. Now, before I give any of my thoughts, John, you're the resident Skaven expert. Take it away. How do you feel about Thankwell?
Sure. So, you know, I really, really genuinely appreciate those kind words, Alex, about my Thankwell there. I will say that I actually did win Best Painted Monstrous Creature. That was the year that GW ran the AOS portion of the BAO. And so I got right up there on my shelf, my Best Monstrous Creature for that guy. And honestly, that model is why I play Skaven. You know, I do have played 40K for a long time. You saw my bike army. I love my bike army. I could talk about that and the pain and of my life that went into building that army, but it's done and I enjoy it. But so kind of once I had done that, you know, it was the end times of fantasy, and I didn't play Ant Fantasy. Wasn't into it, not interested. I looked at the rank and file stuff. Honestly, did not catch my interest. But I've been a long time enjoyer of the Black Library. I read the fiction. Even though I've only been playing the game since about 2012, I've been reading the Black Library since the mid 90s. So I've been a long time enjoyer, right? And so at the end times is when the Thankwall and Bone Ripper model came out. I don't know if you remember that. And it was a big deal. There was a big Skaven release. That's when the Vermin Lords came out. And I saw that model and I said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I was at the No Mercy GT for 40K there in Sacramento, ran by our good friend Peter. And that was a great tournament. That was the one where I brought my 20 drop pod Dark Angels list, took fourth place in the tournament. Yeah. And that day there was, I think it was 25% off or 15% off. I forget the discount, but there was a discount for playing in the tournament if you bought GW stuff. And in addition, they were dumping fantasy stuff like it was going out of style. And all the fantasy kits were 40% off in addition. So it was like 40% off and then 15 or 20% off, I forget. So it was like super discount. And I went and bought not just Thankwall and Bone Ripper, but every single Skaven kit that they had. I just bought everything. And that is also when Donna had me buy most of her demons. Like, she's like, well, if you're going to buy all that, well, then I want all this. So we had a big old sack of loot that we brought home. And that stuff just sat on my shelf forever. But I started work on Thankwall and Bone Ripper. Put the lights in, as you saw. So he has a programmable board. There's actually four different lighting effects that I can put into different zones. There's like 16 different lights in him, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is the reason I play Skaven. So, you know, enough about my model and why I play Skaven and all that. Let me get right down to the rules, because Thankwall is one of those models that has been sort of a centerpiece to the Skaven army for a long time. And his rules have changed a lot, but they followed a pretty basic theme. So there's different things you can always expect him to have. And so first off, the basics, you know, he's 14 wounds. He starts off with a 10-inch move, 4+ save, 7+ bravery. He does have some potential for variable weapons, depending on how you build him. Mm-hmm. Now, luckily for me, I built him with two warp fire projectors, one brazier, and a hand that I could pretend is whatever I want. So it gives me a little flexibility when I'm fielding the model. And that's basically how they've said it, is however you build him, that's the weapons he's going to have. He potentially has from 0 to 4 warp fire projectors and from 0 to 4 warp fire braziers, right? Mm-hmm. And after that, so that's kind of your choice. Do you want him to be shooty or melee? After that, Thankwall on his back has a couple attacks with his staff. And of course, there's also crushing blows, which it's nice. In this edition, they gave it rend. Before, I don't think it had rend. So that's a nice improvement. And overall, even if you go with the shooty version of Thankwall, he's going to be rocking 8 attacks, hitting on 4, wounding on 3s, rend 1. And either 2 damage or D3 damage. So no matter what, he has pretty decent melee. If you go with the warp fire braziers, though, right? Those things are 2 attacks per. So you're going to go with 2 attacks, and it's from 0 to 4 braziers. And those are 3 and 3. So hit on 3s, wound on 3s, rend 2, 3 damage. So pretty brutal stuff. Have you ever had this guy slammed into your lines there, Alex?
Yeah, once. You know, I played a fun little list once with Jeremy, and he brought Thankwall, one of the new Rocket Skaven heroes.
The Bombardier.
Yep, a couple of Graciers, a whole unit, a six-man unit of Rat Ogres. None with Warp Fire, though. He had two close combat and then the other two ranged weapons. He then had some two big blocks of Clan Rats. I think one other smaller block of Clan Rats. He then had... Oh, what are they called? What are the Acolytes? He had the Skyre Acolytes as well.
Oh, wow.
A 15-man unit of that, I think, or a 20 rat unit of that. And, you know, I got in, and it's funny, you know, before I could even hit his line very hard, I think I killed 40 clan rats, and then he just came in and killed, like, half of my army or two-thirds of my army, and then that final third of my army killed almost his entire army.
Wow.
Alone. And then at that point, all I had left was heroes, and it just wasn't going to happen for me. But, you know, so the game was
that
very
sounds
smooth.
Like a typical Skaven-y game there.
Oh, yeah, totally. So the problem was the big linchpin for him was Thankful. And I think he only gave him one Brazier and then three Warp Fire projectors. I mean, in a way, we were also kind of purposefully trying to make a lot of mortal wound ranged abilities to screw with the Nighthawn army. You know, just being able to have, you know, the three separate Warfire projectors were great, especially since, you know, he wasn't able to really get into combat with me. But even then, you know, with just one Warpfire Brazier, that gives him two attacks, because I know that the Warpfire Brazier, you know, the attacks are equal to double the number of Warpfire Braziers that Bone Ripper is armed with. So
that's correct.
You know, he only had one, so he had two attacks, and then
it's still pretty good, because like, if you're doing Ren 2-3 damage, that could rip some stuff up right there. That might drop a character actually.
And that's in addition to, you know, the Staff of the Horned Rat and Crushing Blows.
Right.
You know, so he's got a bunch of attacks. Even if you just did four Warpfire Braziers, which is personally what I – or not Braziers. Four Warpfire Projectors, which is what I would run personally. He's still a force to be reckoned with, you know, in close combat. Yep.
Well, and the thing is, you know, if you go with the four Warpfire Projectors, like you were saying, that's the only point where he still is fairly threatening to characters. Because then, you know, on average, he's still going to do two or three mortal wounds to – most characters that he goes up against. So that's decent. And that's a big change. You know, he used to do 2d6 mortal wounds to a unit within 8 inches, which was just, you know, absolutely brutal, right? But in the old edition, you couldn't have the projectors and the braziers. It was all in on either one, right? So nowadays that you can mix them up, but the way they've changed warp fire to where it's basically roll a dice for each model in a unit that is within 8 inches of this model, and on a 4+, you do a mortal wound. And so if you have, you know, one warp fire projector, then you do one dice per model. If you have two, that's two dice per model. And of course, if you have three or four, that's three or four per model, right? So you're, as you're saying, going with the four warp fire projectors per model, or warp fire projectors, well, you think of how many models you can get within 8 inches. You run them into somebody's line. Now, typically in the shooting phase, you have to remember that you're going to be 3 inches away. So really, you're going to be reaching about 5 inches deep into the average person's line. Most people are running their lines 2 to 3 deep. Even if they're 32 mil bases, you're going to be reaching 3 ranks deep on those 32 mil bases. So that's with you standing 3 inches off an army. And then you're going to fan that out, you know, from that. So you think of, what am I going to get if I'm going up against Nighthaunts? Well, I'm probably going to hit, you know, easily 10 to 15 models. And if I'm lucky and he positions badly, I might even get like 20 models, right? And mm-hmm. then that's going to be 4 dice per. So that's 80 dice. And on a 4+, I'm doing a mortal wound. Brutal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's very fun. And then, you know, on top of all that, you know, not only is he offensive, but let's say you are in one of those linchpin situations where, you know, you're cornered by a keeper of secrets, you know, Nagash is probably going to try to hand a dust you, or somehow, some way, Archaon decimated your line and it's just Thankful and him, at least in the near vicinity. You know, he can still scurry away.
Yeah. And I'm going to scurry away, and I'm going to blast you with some magic.
And he's got a 5-up shrug, you know?
He's
got a 5-up to ignore Wounds are mortal wounds. So that's
well. It's not a shrug. I don't know what this shrug you speak of is. This is the the protection of the great horned rat, which will certainly shrug off the any measly damage that comes his way. Which is new. Before he didn't have a shrug save, as you put it. So that's a nice addition to him.
Yeah.
Though he did have a heal mechanic, which is gone now. So I think that's the trade off. And of course, you know, you can't get talk about Thankwall too long without mentioning that he is, of course, a megalomaniac and he has a warp fire addiction. And if, for Thankwall, that's expressed in the way of you get to roll three dice, pick the two highest. But if the three dice equal a 13, then the spell cannot be dispelled.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you take D6 mortal wounds.
Yeah. And, you know, I love how it is three dice and then you can remove one of them of your choice, especially since not only is that hilarious if it goes off, especially if the dice rolls equal 13 and not necessarily if the casting amount is 13. So you got to really watch out for that one. But I mean, he alone, even on top of this ability for the White Warpstone addiction, you know, he's got the Staff of the Horned Rat. So when we take a look at casting at first, you know, for his first two damage levels, he's +2 to cast and then +1 to cast. And the only time he's not plus anything to cast is when they're in dire straits, you know, when they only have 3 wounds left. Yeah.
He's about to die. Yeah, and so it gave that +2, and then you got to figure that in most Skaven armies, you're going to have a Gnawhole, and a character standing next to a Gnawhole is going to get an additional +1 to casting. So Thankwall is typically rocking a +3 to casting and doing that 3d6 crap of his. So, you know, good luck stopping him. Good luck getting casts off. Like, that is going to shut down pretty much whatever you want it to. Oh, what was that, Zeench? You just rolled yourself to a 13? Well, here's my 15.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. That he is great. And on top of that, you know, he has a level 2 wizard. You know, he can cast 2 spells and unbind 2 spells. So,
yep.
You know, when we look at the spells they might have too, you know, his madness spell, you know, it's something where you only have to pick a hero within 3 inches. So you do have to be in a bit of a danger zone for it. But, you know, it is helpful. You know, you roll the number of dice equal to the combined value of the attack's characteristic for all melee weapons that hero is armed with. And for every 5 up, you can inflict 1 mortal wound. And on 1 enemy unit within 3 inches of the hero, you can choose between, you know, different units to suffer those wounds. So when I think of this type of ability, I mean, it may not always work on every unit. You know, you're definitely going to, if you're going to do this type of ability, you're not going to be banking on doing a lot of damage when you fight a necromancer with one attack. But when we look at the you know, things like the Herald's on Exalted Keepers with 23 attacks or 21 attacks, you know, they can do that.
Yep, and you might be able to one if you flip that back on that keeper or that chariot. You're probably going to drop the chariot, or even better yet, there's a unit nearby or one of those squishy characters, maybe. You know, the epitome or something like that you can just boom. Oh, what was that? You hit me with 23 attacks or you have 23 attacks and we're going to do, let's call it 7 mortal wounds on the epitome. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And I don't think, it's a fun ability, but I mean, you know, depending on who he's going up against, he might want to just not be in combat and scurry away. So it really depends on what happens during the game, of course.
Well, and you figure at this point, though, he is also, you know, this is the magic phase, right? And he basically, it has to be within 3 inches. So he's already locked in combat. So that's like, you charged me. I wasn't able to scurry away. And then I get to cast this spell, mess some stuff up. And then I still get to run away in my combat phase. You know, I killed the thing that was blocking me in me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, on top of everything that you and I have talked about today, you know, he can heal a wound. And then, you know, we are. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he can.
And his warp amulet. He heals.
Oh, he can. Look at that.
Yeah. Can
what? Oh, man. That's it. Oh,
have you not been playing that?
Uh-huh. No, I thought he got rid of it. I didn't even see it there. I'm looking at it. It's right in front of me, the war banner.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. My every time I was hitting him, you know, I was doing some minor spells against Jeremy, and I was knocking him out to the kind of mid-range where he was only plus one to cast, and then I kept on forgetting he could heal the wound. So basically, I kept on basically doing a wound, then he kept on healing a wound, and he kind of stayed in that upper tier area, the second damage tier. So it was pretty frustrating.
Well, then I take back what I said earlier. Yeah, so he still has a heal ability. Even better. Now he has a shrug save and a heal. Man, he is the best ever. Now, he is expensive is the only other side of it, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. How many points is he?
I think he's rocking 400 points nowadays. Is it 400 or 440? Let me see here. Let's see. Mr. Thankwall. I am not seeing him off the top of my head, and I should know that. I should have, like, totally prepared, but I'm pretty sure he's 440.
Okay. Yeah,
because he's 400 in the book here, and I'm pretty sure that he got facked up. So he's either 400 like the book, or he's facked up to 440. So I might be, maybe he was 440 and he's 400 now. Yeah, because there's no fack on the book yet. So that's it. Yeah, 400. 400 points. Awesome.
Yeah, he's great. And, you know, he's even got a very sexy command ability. John, how about you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So, well, first off, his command ability requires that you kind of go with a fairly specific build, because what it's going to do is it's going to allow you to take three other Skaven heroes and allow them to use each of the basic command abilities. So basically, one of them is going to be able to trigger at the double. So it's going to be able to maximize a runs for one unit. And then a different hero is going to allow you to reroll a charge. And then yet another hero is going to allow you to do an inspiring presence or become immune to battle shock. So basically, you have to have those three other heroes set up. Now, it doesn't particularly have to be any special clan, so it can be any hero, but you do have to have three different heroes to get this off. But if you're set up to do that, you can imagine that, you know, Thankwall, and he's running behind my plague monks, and, you know, they have a couple of priests and a furnace hanging out near them. So Thankwall sends them running off an extra 6 inches, so they actually get to move six plus an extra one for the bell, so they've just moved 13 inches across the board. Now they have a rerollable charge after that 13 inches. Of course, they're completely out of range of any protection from anything. So hopefully I can run something else behind there. And, you know, maybe Thankwall himself is staying within 12 inches to give them, it can't be Thankwall. So it has to be another hero that's going to be within 6 inches to protect them from battle shock. So that's the hardest one to get off out of there. But maybe you pull it off. Maybe you leave a stringing guy behind to do that. And boom, you've just annihilated some unit in the enemy's lines.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it just adds to the, you know, I know that it might require a little bit more finesse, you know, especially for less experienced Skaven players in order to make full use of that. But between Nahols and, you know, really being able to have a lot of bodies and a lot of heroes on the table, you know, it seems like that's very useful. It's definitely a good tool in the toolbox.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, most lists I'm looking at nowadays with Skaven are running, you know, 4 to 6 heroes minimum. Min to max, I should say, but at least 4 heroes. And it's so easy to drop. I mean, you've got Plague Priests at 80 points that are dealing out mortal wounds. You've got, you know, Grey Seers coming in at 120 points, or you're going to do some a Warlock Engineer at 100 points. You know, another great caster that dishes out mortal wounds. Maybe a Bombardier to get a little range shooting in there also for 100 points. So it's why not have characters everywhere. And like you said, you're bipping and bopping in and out of gnaw holes and all that good stuff. So lots of fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, again, he's a little bit of a spicy meatball point wise, but he brings a lot to the table here. So, yeah, for all of our listeners out there, I know we've talked quite a bit about Skaven before. You know, definitely going to have to move on to other units eventually. But, you know, it's been a while since we talked about a Chaos faction. And, you know, Thankwall is, again, yeah, just another tool in the toolbox. And it is the, you know, it's almost like the Skaven themselves are a bit of a deus ex machina in AOS fluff and AOS lore. You know, they're always the ones that are doing something that causes something bigger to happen, you know?
Oh, yeah. There you go. They are definitely the meta buster, I said, whether they're digging down the moon or popping holes in the ocean. Something crazy is always happening.
They are
the behind the scenes driving force of everything. And we all know that ultimately the Great Horned Rat is the greatest of the chaos gods.
Ooh.
And further, we know that, you know, meager players at the game in order, death and destruction all bow before chaos anyway. So if we look at the greater hierarchy, we see that, in fact, everybody bows before the Great Horned Rat.
Ooh, bold words, bold words. Now, John, you know, you do have Firehead Productions. Do you have any events that you'd like to promote that are upcoming for Age of Sigmar?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have a little bit of a tournament coming up here for Gamecastle Mountain View on the 15th of June. It's just going to be a small event. We're looking at, I think it's 1250 points or 1,000 points. I'd have to look at BCP. Sorry, you kind of caught me unawares on that one. But we've just finished off a slow grow league, and we're starting off another slow grow league over at Gamecastle Mountain View. So if you're into Facebook, if you're in the Bay here in the Bay Area, check that out. And if you want to get your Age of Sigmar on, definitely join that slow grow league. And if you've been wanting to give your try at a tournament, a little 1,000 point on the 15th is a great place to start. So hope to see you there.
Perfect, perfect. In the Pacific Northwest, you know, we don't have any, you know, very large events coming up. We have Shattered Realms and OC Geeks and Games in Oregon City, Oregon, in the first week of, or the first weekend of July. However, besides that, you know, we do have the Forge in Spokane, Washington. That's going to be the final weekend of July. That's going to be the weekend of July 27th. And the weekend after that, also in Washington, but on the other side of the state, you know, our good friend Ben Schmoller of Chump Change, teammate of Ben of Jeremy, you know, one of our co-hosts, of course, the French Overlord, they're going to be having the T-Shift Age of Sigmar event that'll be fitting in line right with their 40K major event. So for all of our listeners out there who do want to go to a great GT, we're going to try to get quite a few familiar faces from across multiple regions. And, you know, I certainly am going to be there as well. I hope, John, if you are able to, you know, come up to Bellevue, Washington, we'll be able to get some good games in and see a widespread of armies as well.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun, that's for sure.
With that being said, this is going to be Alex and John signing off. Be sure to rate us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you get your podcasts in particular. Have a great night, everyone.
Later. Take care.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.